Welcome back to the Red Seat Podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux, and today I am joined by Brian Joyner of BP Boston, and also today our special guest is Matt Collins of Over the Monster. You can find these two gentlemen on Twitter at Brian Joyner and Matt R.Y. Collins. Guys, how are we doing today?
Wonderful.
I'm great, and Jake, given what you're about to say, you don't have to say I'm from BP Boston exclusively anymore.
I do not. I do not have to say that because these two gentlemen and I are about to embark on a new journey for this the Red Seat Podcast. So if you have been listening to the Red Seat Podcast, I want to let you all know that we are moving the podcast. Yes, we are keeping this crew together, though. Matt Collins, who was on the first season. We are keeping Brian Joyner, who has been on both seasons, and myself. And we are moving the podcast from BP Boston to the SB Nation site Over the Monster. We are going to be coming to you weekly during the season, and it's going to be the three of us as the core group. So we're going to be together and hopefully develop a little bit of continuity there. We will still have guests on, and you will still be able to hopefully access all of our old episodes as we are moving the archives over as well. So hopefully nothing will change for you guys except for where the actual podcast is located now, but we're going to try and make it so nothing changes as far as your subscription goes. So you'll still get the exact same podcast and all that good stuff. So yeah, we've got the crew back together. We haven't had Matt Collins on this show since he went over to take over the Monster as the managing editor over there. So we have a lot to talk about here, and we hope that everybody who listens to this show and all of you guys out there have made this possible, that you will stick with us through the transition. So hopefully that wasn't too long-winded.
No, I mean, and it's still on the internet. It's really in the same place.
Exactly, exactly. So with that, the Red Sox have been active so far this offseason. No big acquisitions so far, but I want to talk about the first real news that has happened with the team. The Red Sox decided to protect three players ahead of Monday's 8 p.m. deadline, adding them to the 40-man roster. The three players that they chose to protect were Jalen Beeks, Chandler Shepherd, and Ty Buttrey. I think these are the guys that we sort of expected them to. Matt, I want to go to you first on this. You wrote an article about this the day that they protected these players, and you actually did predict that these three guys would be the ones protected. Why was this the logical choice?
Well, they really are the only three that have any real chance of sticking in the majors this year. I think the only question was going to be whether or not they'd keep a spot open, either to make the offseason a little bit easier when they start adding players, or maybe even to pick somebody in the draft. But the only other real guy who I think might have a shot at getting taken at some point in the draft would be Jake Cozart. And even he, I think, probably would be back with the organization by the time the season starts. So none of these guys are super exciting, but they have a chance to be major leaguers this year. So they were the only real options.
Any thoughts on these guys, Brian?
I cannot believe that Jalen Beeks is white. That's my thought. And his name, it's very reminiscent of Mookie Betts. It's a great baseball name. That's the entirety of my exposure to them. So probably want to stick with Matt's opinion on this one.
All right. So to give everybody just a little bit of overview of some of these guys, Jalen Beeks performed pretty well last year as a starter in Double A and made it up to Triple A last year. Chandler Shepherd has been a pretty good reliever for the team in AAA, as well as he came up to the majors last year. And interestingly enough, Chandler Shepherd has been pitching as a starter in the Mexican League this winter. Ty Buttrey was one of the guys that the Red Sox sent to the AFL, and he's got a huge fastball, but does tend to have some control issues. Does that about sum these guys up, Matt?
Yeah, pretty much. I think Beeks is the guy. If we're looking at somebody with a major league future, I think he's the most likely. He used to have a really violent delivery, and he's a really small guy, so it seemed like he was destined for the bullpen, but he came back this year and his delivery is a lot cleaner. I think a lot of people still think he's going to the bullpen, but I mean, I saw him a few times in Portland this year, and I think he's going to be a starter. I don't think he's an ace or anything, but I think he could be a number four or five starter in the majors at some point in the next couple of years. Shepherd and Buttery, I think, are just fringe relievers.
What do you make of the fact that they tried to stretch Chandler Shepherd out this winter?
Yeah, I don't really understand it. I guess I kind of speculated that he's not really good enough to be a back-end reliever, so he kind of needs something to separate himself. So if he can be a guy that can go two and three innings every time he goes, maybe that's why they're doing it. I can't really imagine that they're going to keep him as a starter very long, though.
Yeah, grooming him as a long man is a little bit of an odd thing to do. What about Ty Buttrey, though? He's kind of the most interesting one of these guys. That third spot was, whenever you looked at people's lists kind of forecasting who they were going to protect, that third spot was the one that was kind of always up for grabs. I thought it would be Buttrey as well, just because of the pure stuff. He does look like the type of guy who could be a sixth or a seventh inning reliever if everything breaks right for him and he gets that control kind of corralled a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a big if, but he does have a big fastball. He was a fairly well-thought-of starter when they drafted him out of high school. Obviously, that didn't work out, so he has some pedigree. The fastball can get to triple digits every once in a while, so he's interesting enough to take a chance on, but I'm not too sold on it.
So taking a look at this 40-man now, there are not any really obvious spots as to guys that they would get rid of if they did end up signing somebody in the offseason. But one spot I could kind of think of right off the bat that they might look at is that spot that Henry Owens now occupies. What do you make of him still being on the roster at this point?
Well, there's no point in getting rid of him until you absolutely have to. So, I mean, I've pretty much lost all faith in him, but if they do keep him around, I think it might be worth it just to see if he can do something in the bullpen, maybe shorter outings. He can get that control in check just a little bit, but yeah, he's probably the first or second to go if they do need a spot.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. You know, lefties live forever, so he will continue to get chances, but, you know, not optimistic about Henry Owens at this point. So I guess the bigger news is, if you follow me on Twitter, you have just seen nothing but ideas for the Red Sox and their offseason this year by me, probably annoyingly so. I seem to gain and lose 3 followers a day based off of the stuff that I tweet. So, you know, it is what it is, but so far, we've had no activity for the Red Sox. GM meetings came and went. Usually, those aren't, you know, something where a big splash gets made. But we are sort of on the cusp of the winter meetings, which are taking place December 10th and 14th through the 14th in Orlando. I think, guys, that the first domino to go seems like it's going to be Giancarlo Stanton. Things started to kind of heat up in the last couple days when there were reports that the Giants and the Cardinals had made official offers, and potentially the Red Sox had made an official offer. The Giants' offer was actually leaked, and no one knows whether or not that's, you know, legit, that what was leaked is the real package. But the package that was leaked wasn't all that impressive. So when I saw that, it kind of gave me hope that, man, Dombrowski can definitely match this package. And if Dombrowski can match it or better it, I started to think that Stanton is probably going to be wearing a Red Sox uniform. What was both of your guys' reactions to that? I'll go to Brian Joyner first and then to Matt.
I wouldn't say that I think that it's likely. I mean, maybe there's a plurality of likelihood, but I still think it's more likely than not that he's not on the Red Sox. And I think the leak game is very difficult to play. What I've always said is that this type of trade is the best thing that Dombrowski is the thing that Dombrowski is the best at. When there's someone to go get, he is able to go get them at prices that at the time and retrospectively look pretty good. So in theory, it's a good situation. Having an open process for the reigning MVP is a little bit more difficult in that it doesn't probably offer a lot of room to be savvy in there. However, if the Red Sox get it done, I think I think whatever deal the Red Sox would do would obviously be good enough for them that we as fans would be okay with it, because I think they're, you know, the Red Sox being a top tier team and there being a few names out there, they don't need to fixate on one. So part of the reason I'm less involved in this in the day to day, or in your case, 5 minutes to 5 minutes on Twitter, is that I trust them not to do a Sandoval type misfire with the guys who are available, A, because the guys are good, B, because it's not the same people making the deal and they're making the deals for different reasons, and C, because, and this relates back to A and B, they're going to get good players no matter what. I'm not as confident, but I'm confident if they do get them, it wouldn't bankrupt the team. Matt, what do you think?
Well, I think you do make a good point about Dombrowski being really good at this. If there's one guy I have faith in making this kind of blockbuster, it's him. But this one is a little bit different just because of the no trade clause. And I just have no idea if Stanton wants to come here or not. This is pure speculation, but there's just been so many National League teams connected to him. I kind of get the feeling that he really wants to play the field. And the best way to guarantee that he can do that is to say he wants to go to a National League team. He also really wants to play on the West Coast. The Red Sox, of course, do not play on the West Coast. So, I don't know. I don't want to say I don't want him, because if the Red Sox trade for Giancarlo Stanton, I'm obviously going to be psyched. First time he hits a home run, it's going to be awesome. But it just, this whole situation just scares the crap out of me, and I just want it to be over. That contract, his injury history, and if they have to give up someone like Benintendi or Devers, then all the way out. Anything other than that, I'll listen, but it's just scary. I'd rather just spend money on JD Martinez or go small this offseason than worry about the Stanton thing for a few weeks.
So the Stanton thing is nerve-wracking, and I think you make a good point about the no-trade clause being really interesting, because conceivably Stanton could just say no to the Red Sox, even if they have the best offer, and say no to the Giants because he wants to go to the Dodgers. And they might be forced to take whatever the Dodgers are offering, because it seems like the Marlins have sort of spoiled their best asset in the fact that everybody kind of knows that the Marlins are going to trade him this offseason. So I think that that's a big reason why the packages that were leaked out, and like Brian said, we don't really know whether they're legit or not, but why they were smaller. I mean, everybody knows they just don't have the leverage that they might otherwise have. They're not going to keep him. This ownership group it seems like it's very money conscious and that he is going to move. So when you talk about guys like Benintendi or Devers being involved in the deal, which is what a lot of people said in the beginning, I'm with you. I am totally out on that. But if you tell me that this deal gets made centered around JBJ and Chavis or, Eddie Rodriguez and Jason Grom or something like that, I am all the way the hell in, especially if they can take any money in this deal, even if it's like $5 million that they float. So I think it's interesting, and I think that he probably – If you can center that deal around JBJ, this is probably the best move that the Red Sox could make this offseason, better than everybody else who's out there right now.
Yeah, I think that's wishful thinking. I mean, it is Giancarlo Stanton. So saying they're dealing from a position of weakness is, I guess it's true relative to the best possible position that they could be in. But with a lot of potential suitors, it's not that weak.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is why I don't know if like a deal centered around JBJ is ultimately going to get it done. And I think it might be – I wouldn't get your hopes up, Jake.
It really depends on how many teams Stanton is willing to go to. Because if he's willing to go to just about any of the teams that have been rumored about him, then there's going to be enough competition where it doesn't matter how much leverage the Marlins have, because all these teams want him. Somebody's going to have to give up a lot. So it's the ball's really in his court right now.
Have there been any Yankees rumors now that, you know, Derek Jeter owns the Marlins?
I don't think, nothing substantial. I've seen a few people float it, but I don't think it's super likely. I think they're waiting for next year for Harper and Machado.
Yeah. Yeah, I see that. I'm just, after A-Rod, never put anything past them.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't see this thing probably happening, but I think it's really interesting. And I don't know. I'm kind of just watching it eagerly rather than getting my hopes up too much, because there's so many other good options. Oh
no, we see on Twitter how eager you are. I was gonna say I'm very impressed, because I'm the exact opposite, and that's why our conversations are good. But that you really, on it, just a very granular level, are very invested.
So I don't think I've tweeted that much about the Stanton thing, though. I tweet a lot more about Jose Abreu than I do Stanton, because I think that move makes a whole
back
lot more
months,
sense.
Though. You've tweeted about Stanton for months.
That's
so
true. But
if that's not just that's not just like a last 3 weeks thing.
But at first, though, when I thought the cost was going to be really prohibitive, I was totally anti-Stanton. But now that I have this semblance of hope, which, you know, you're telling me might be false hope, that this package can get done without altering the core of the group, yeah, I kind of like it a little bit more. But I want to talk about Jose Abreu for a second, too, because that's another one of these names that is certainly going to be available this offseason, and I think makes a lot of sense for this team, because what I've talked about at length on this podcast and in articles and things like that is that the next 2 years for this Red Sox team are the most important of this run right now, because it's when they have pretty much everybody signed, 2018, 2019. Abreu fits really nicely into that window because he is signed for both of those 2 years as well. He plays for a team that is going nowhere and has really not a lot of reason to not trade him. So if they can get a good package over there for Abreu, he certainly would come in and solve a lot of their issues and be some right-handed power that they can play at first base, and that'd be a huge upgrade. What do you guys think about Abreu? Do you think that that makes more sense than the Stanton thing, or, you know, is it something that either of you would be interested in?
I'd be interested, and I think it makes sense, but I don't really think the Red Sox have the pieces. I think this is where they really miss having depth at the top of their farm system, because they have Benintendi and Devers, who they don't want to deal, and then they have Groom and Chavis, who aren't good enough to get a guy like Abreu, and there's really nothing in between, so I don't really think they have that kind of deal to offer.
What do you think, Joyner?
I agree with Matt. I do agree with Matt, and I don't know what to add. I do think that there's a decent argument to be made in the abstract that whatever deal you could pull for Abreu is definitely going to be a lower relative cost than the one for Stanton. Now, it might not end up being that way. But Stanton has everything going his way for an overpay, which I know you said that's what you were specifically trying to avoid. But it's the Red Sox could use anyone who could hit. Now, we will get to this. I don't think they need as much hitting help as maybe you suspect, but every team could use Jose Abreu. So if they could pull off a deal, I mean, I think that Devers and Benintendi are just so clearly not going anywhere at this point that there's no reason to worry about it. At least I don't worry about it. Jake, do you worry about them being traded?
I do not. I don't even think that that's
it would just
on the table.
Honestly, I think it would be Devers at this point. I think that it's sort of beyond comprehension that Benintendi would be traded.
I would put it at like a 1% chance either one's traded at this point.
I got to be honest, though. I'm starting to get a little bit more nervous that the guy who might be traded, who I really don't want to see traded, is Xander Bogaerts. I wonder how Dombrowski's patience level with him as a player is right now. And I have this like bad sinking feeling in my stomach that Xander Bogaerts could end up being a casualty of this winter. I don't know if you guys are getting that same feeling.
Strong disagree.
I definitely don't feel that way.
I hope you're right.
I think if we know that the potential causes behind his slump last year, the team knows that too. And you couldn't. The only type of player you would trade Xander Bogaerts for is the same exact type of player. So. I think you don't need to worry about that. I think they're fine.
Well, I hope so. I think it's just the defensive profile that I get a little bit worried about because Dave Dombrowski just strikes me as the type of guy who really likes a strong defender at shortstop, and he, you know, traded for Jose Iglesias, stuff like that. So I just get a little bit worried that Xander Bogaerts, if he's not doing what we kind of thought he could do with the bat, is also not doing it defensively. And I still think that he's going to be one of those guys that ends up having, you know, several more all-star caliber years, and hopefully, you know, years that far and away eclipse what he even was able to do in 2016. I think that's still in there, and I'm really optimistic about him working with the new hitting coach, who can hopefully get him to loft the ball a little bit more. But I do worry that, you know, if the Marlins ask for him as a centerpiece to the Santana trade, that could be something that Dombrowski could do, especially with a guy like Cozart available on the free agent market.
That was a nice Freudian slip when you called it a Santana trade for the Marlins.
Oh, yes.
No, that would be bananas, and I don't see Dombrowski doing that. He's not really a panicker in my eyes, not in that sense. He's a panicker sometimes in acquiring a big name, but he's not really the guy who trades away a player after one rough season.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But I do think you guys are nuts about this Abreu thing. I think that the Red Sox called up Chicago and offered a package of, say, Chavis Grom and Blake Swihart for Abreu, 2 years of Abreu on a team that's going nowhere. I think they take that in a heartbeat.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. I haven't really looked at how many teams need a first baseman, but I feel like they could probably beat that.
I don't disagree in theory. Though I think it goes without saying, though I'll say it anyway, that your opinion of the value of Blake Swihart.
Yeah, I don't think Swihart has very much value at this point.
Matt, you can't say that to him.
I just did.
You really shouldn't. I'm currently wearing a Blake Swihart jersey.
Oh my! Wait, a jersey or a shirzy?
I'm actually wearing Blake Swihart's clothes right now.
Okay, I see.
All right, so let's move on. We've talked about two of the big trade targets potentially, but Matt, you have been driving the very reasonable train this offseason of signing a guy who Fangraphs calls the best value of the offseason, and I think that that's probably accurate, in Carlos Santana. He's a guy who's getting a little bit older. His power is certainly waning. His plate discipline is not... He's not sort of this huge, big splash of a bat, but he's someone who's going to be productive and a good defender at first base, and probably can be had for a 3-year deal. So tell us why the Red Sox need him.
Well, okay. First of all, they don't need him. He's just, I think, the most reasonable option. Let me see. They're predicting he's going to get, I think, 3 years, 3 years, $45 million. And he's a guy who he'll put up an ISO around 200, about 25 home runs a year. He's going to strike out maybe 14, 15% of the time. He'll walk about 14, 15% of the time. He's going to play good defense at first base. And I mean, that's the kind of profile that I think, even though he's on the older side, I think that will stay productive for a 3 or 4 year contract. With any of these free agents, it's not really the money that I'm worried about, but the years and having these Hanley Ramirez situations where you're looking at the last couple of years of the contract and maybe a little bit scared. I don't think that'll be the case with Santana. I'd certainly be more excited if they signed somebody like JD Martinez, but I think if they're being smart, Santana would slot perfectly into first base. They could just put Hanley at DH and then kind of call it an offseason there, at least from the lineup. I don't think it would get the fans excited, but I think the lineup would be a lot better off for that.
Yeah, I think the lineup would be a lot better off with Santana too, and especially the more that I think about it, if they do go out and sign one of the free agent first basemen, I would so much rather have Santana than Eric Hosmer, who I think is probably going to get at least double the contract that you just mentioned
Wait, wait,
Santana
wait,
being
wait.
able to
Time out.
get.
Time out. Time
Yes.
out. I'm cutting you off. Isn't this the exact opposite of what you said to me last month? Weren't you very in on Hosmer and out on
I
Santana?
was not in on Hosmer. I told you that Dave Dombrowski loves Hosmer. I know that he loves Hosmer, and I know that he probably wants to really pay Hosmer. You know that he's a Dombo
You know, there's tape on this, so I'm going to go listen to it because I think you were
guy.
in on Hosmer and out
I
on
wasn't in on
Santana.
Hosmer. I told you
Because
that
I was
Dave
in on
wants him.
Santana. I was in on Santana, and you changed my mind.
I did tell
And
you that Santana's not that good and that he's slipping. So
no,
I
well,
do
no.
believe that these guys are going in different directions.
I mean, my opinion then and my opinion now are the same thing, and that is that Santana would be sufficient because I think that with another year of growth, especially for Benintendi endeavors, with a healthier Xander and a competent Mookie, hopefully. I don't know how much offense you need to add to this team for it to be, you know, passable at least and decent, a step up from that next year. And at least with Santana, there is no question about what you're getting. I mean, the floor is high.
Yeah, I
Even
agree with you.
as he declines, the floor is high.
I guess though, I mean Hosmer's coming off his best season, right? He just put up a weighted runs created plus of 135. I don't particularly think he's going to do that again because he had a 351 BABIP, but couldn't you see a couple more of these 4+ win seasons coming from Hosmer while we see maybe two and a half win seasons from Carlos Santana? So I think in a bubble, I'd
Yeah, but you're
prefer.
also getting a couple replacement level seasons from Hosmer in the same stretch, and you're getting all 2.5, 3 win seasons from Santana. So I'll take the consistency over Hosmer being a roller coaster.
I Also, that facial hair and the mohawk.
doesn't
Honestly,
help.
you got to live with that shit, man.
Yeah, I'm definitely not going to be the one defending Hosmer here. I think the good things about him, like the good things about Carlos Santana, is both of these guys stay on the field, which is really nice, especially if you're going to sign somebody who is going to be a big part of your lineup. You want him to be durable. But I have historically been an anti-Hosmer guy, so I'm not going to sit here and defend him, and I don't want to pay him $100 million. But I do
Oh,
think
it's going to be a lot more
that,
than 100.
I hope not. But at 6'4", 225, he is a prototypical first baseman. He's a lefty bat with some pop, and everybody loves his leadership. This is what I was telling you, Joyner. I mean, this guy played over Paul Goldschmidt in the World Baseball Classic. That is fucking dumb.
It's been like this forever. He was on the 2012 Olympic team. I mean, which was just crazy. And I think he was on the most recent one too. He's just the for what it's worth, the people in baseball have always loved him. He's like a combination of the, for lack of a better term, the pre-Moneyball ideal, with some actual skill. Like, he has just enough actual skill, just enough, like, presence and physicality that he is treated like a superstar. Now, he put up a great season last year, and he's in his prime. But screw him.
He has a very good-looking wife.
I mean, if he didn't, that would be problematic. Not problematic. It would actually be charming as hell. But it's not surprising.
Do you guys know what I'm talking about, though? There was just, like, this benefit that he attended, and there was, like, all these photos of him and his wife dressed up.
She's the one who works at, Casey McDonald or something. She works for Nesson.
Yeah, that's right.
That's why everybody's saying that he's coming to the Red Sox because of that. And I, like, half-heartedly believe it, so it's kind of scaring me.
That is a type of thing that I would have blown off, like, 10 years ago. I would have been like, but now that I just have time to, I guess, watch it and, I don't know, maybe understand better, that's not a terrible thing. Didn't that happen with, was it Lackey when he came because his kid was sick and there was really good medical coverage?
I know what you're talking about. I don't remember who it was, but yeah, I mean, these are people. It would make sense for Hosmer to want to be close to his girlfriend. I wouldn't really begrudge him for it, but I don't want him on the Red Sox, so.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Red Sox also, it's not like if your girlfriend is in the area, you get to stay on them, as Middlebrooks knows, but let's move on.
He did get Jenny Dell as a parting gift.
No, but that, my point was that he was shipped out of town. She was still there. She, you know, anyhow.
All right, we can move on from this.
All right. Yeah. So, JD Martinez, guys. JD Martinez is the name that everybody had been talking about. Basically, since the Red Sox season ended, everybody was saying JD Martinez is the bat that the Red Sox need. Makes too much sense. He's kind of the biggest bopper on the market right now. But as time has gone on this offseason, I feel like we've quietly been hearing less and less about JD Martinez. And part of that might be the $200 million plus tag that Scott Boras has attached to JD Kong in his 45 home runs. But part of that also, I think, might be people realizing that a poor outfielder and potential DH player might not age how this team wants at the money that he's going to demand this offseason. So I'm wondering, do you think that the Red Sox are maybe not as in on the obvious guy, JD Martinez, as we kind of thought they were going to be?
Nah, they're definitely in on him. I mean, they would be insane not to be. I don't care if he can't play the field. He's a DH, whatever.
The Red Sox were made for a player who can't play the field and can only DH and is right-handed. Like,
we already had one of those. His name is Hanley fucking Ramirez.
Yeah, he can play first base. He's fine.
Yeah, he's fine at first base.
I don't know, man. There's no way that they're going to actually keep Hanley Ramirez and sign JD Martinez. How could that be a thing?
Pretty easily. Either they trade Bradley and put Martinez in left field, or Ramirez is... I mean, it was only 2 years ago that Ramirez played first base pretty much every day.
He was really bad at it, though.
I don't think he was that bad. He wasn't great.
He was passable.
Yeah, no, he wasn't. I'm going to look up his metrics right now. I don't care about
a single season first base defensive metrics.
I think that Matt probably touched on something that...
Also, he's not getting $200 million.
Right when you said it seemed a lot more likely than like being able to trade JBJ up for something. JBJ has, I mean, he's always seemed like the most tradable guy. And on top of that, I think the most likely scenario is not trading him up. It's acquiring bigger pieces and trading him to backfill the small pieces because he's the guy who's expendable with the bigger pieces. That just that seems more likely to me in the abstract than
trading
him for Stanton.
That's always kind of been my idea. I mean, I don't really want to do it. I'd rather put Martinez at DH, but I mean, they're obviously not trading Betts or Benintendi, so trade Bradley for bullpen help, prospects, whatever. Move Benintendi over to center, put Martinez in left.
What was going on with the Bradley for Belt rumors? Because that
wasn't really a rumor. The Giants were interested, and then people just kind of connected the dots with Belt. I don't know.
I mean, that makes a... That
it
makes
does make a lot of sense.
Of sense, yes.
Hey, that was one of my tweets, Brian.
Yeah, I follow you for a reason. I like the thing.
No, but that does make a lot of sense, though. If you do sign JD, trade JBJ for Belt, put Belt at first base, keep Hanley at DH, and, you know, play JD in left field, I think that would be something that would be okay. I mean, you can hide people in left field at Fenway. Manny Ramirez played it passably for, what, 8 years?
I'm glad you think it would be okay if they signed JD Martinez and traded for Brandon Belt. I'm glad that has your seal of approval.
Whatever. All I'm thinking about is Manny Ramirez outfield assists right now.
Okay.
Everybody's freaking out about the $200 million asking price or whatever. And this happens literally every offseason. The biggest free agent always asks for like $50 million more than he ends up getting. So Martino's will get about $150 million and it'll be... pretty decent amount of money, but nothing crazy, and we'll all move on with our lives.
And how many years are we talking for this $200 million?
For the $200 million? They're probably asking for like 7 years. You'll probably get like six.
Yeah.
Jim Bowden's not doing free agent predictions anymore. It's throwing me all off.
So if he gets 6 years, that'll put him at his age 36 season when he expires with the Red Sox. This is a guy who's going to have limited value in the field. He projects next year as somewhere around a 2.5 to a 3 WAR player. I mean, that's not great value.
Do you know who didn't have a value in the field and was pretty good for the Boston Red Sox?
Manny Ramirez?
That's not who I was going to say, my friend.
Maybe David Ortiz?
That was the one I was going to say.
Yeah, you don't really look at WAR for somebody like Martinez. You look at WRC plus, the dude's just gonna mash.
Yeah, I also think that that's a case where you look at, like, we're a top shelf team, we can afford luxury items, and it's just like, just put him on the team, and it's sort of added value because you can build everything around it. So as Matt said, he's gonna mash and he's gonna hit. And if you can build the rest around it, and you should be able to, given that you're not really boxed in, especially since this is outfield, not first base, where there's always sort of a log jam. That's not something that concerns me.
Yeah, he was unbelievable last year. He had a 166 WRC plus with a 690 slugging percentage. I think maybe the most talked about part of JD Martinez this offseason is probably going to be whether or not he chooses to stay with Arizona, if they want to offer him some money, because Arizona was really, really good for him. He hit like close to 30 home runs with Arizona last year, and they made it to the playoffs. So it is conceivable to me that he would want to stay there.
Yeah, I don't think they have that kind of money.
If they do, like, athletes love Arizona. Theoretically, it makes sense. But if they don't have that money, they don't have the money. And if he's got Boris, he wants that money. So
he wants that cheddar. All right. So, Joyner, you want to get in here?
Yeah, I was going to say just one more thing on him, but I forgot what it was. So go ahead. Let's move on.
All right. So... there are a whole bunch of second-tier free agents out on the market. Specifically, the Red Sox have been connected to some of the first-base options. Logan Morrison, potential guy there. Lucas Duda, they could be involved with. That's Matt's guy. Yonder Alonso, some of these other players. Even Mitchie Two Bags could be back with the team. What do you guys think about the second tier free agent options, not only at first base but elsewhere? Do you think that any of these guys are good options for the Red Sox?
They're fine. I'd rather them do something bigger, but I mean, Lucas Duda would be okay. He's more of a platoon guy. You'd have to either put Brenson against lefties at DH and Hanley at first, or put Travis at first or something. But I mean, he's MLB trade rumors has him getting a 1-year deal for $6 million, and he's a lot better than that. So if they were to get one of these middle tier first baseman, he would be the guy, but I would much rather them make a splash.
He hit 30 home runs last year.
Everybody hit 30 home runs last year, though, to be fair. Except if they were on the Red Sox. Except if they were on the Red Sox.
I think I agree with Matt that Duda is the best of the bunch, though I generally think that it's pretty much an interchangeable bunch, and I think that sort of is informing Matt's thought that, like, I'd rather move up from it. I agree that Duda is probably the most attractive option, because I feel like with the Red Sox, with the way they're looking at this, as much as you're worrying about roster construction, the Red Sox should be looking at talent. And I feel like Duda has the talent to put up the best numbers out of a guy who you're going to be asking to hit. So, and it's $6 million. That's a steal, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, I like Duda too. The only thing that sucks about Duda is that he's only played 150 plus games once in his career. He does seem to get injured in some capacity every year. And like you guys mentioned, he is going to be a platoon guy. So the power is real, but you know, he's.
Well, you also get the Lucas Duda Instagram, which is a thing.
I didn't know about that thing, but it makes me more interested.
So he, when he was on the Mets, they just, the other players on the team would just like ambush him with video, because he's sort of aloof and funny in that way that the more you see it, it's more entertaining. And so Curtis Granderson, when he was still on the Mets, and Duda was traded, gave the Twitter account to someone on the Rays. I think it might have been Longoria. I can't remember who. And so now they just ambushed Lucas Duda, and I imagine if he came to the Red Sox, it would probably go into the hands of, I don't know, anyone but Dustin Pedroia.
Probably David Price.
I'm in on that. 100.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I'm in on Duda is the long story.
Short story. So now I'm going to ask you guys to make predictions for the offseason. Matt, I'm going to go with you first. What do you think the Red Sox actually end up doing?
I didn't know this was going to happen. Carlos Santana and Tony Watson. Sure.
Okay. That's quiet. That would be a very quiet offseason for this team.
It's probably not going to happen, but whatever.
All right. Joyner.
Yeah, I think what the scenario we just discussed, and I'm only saying this because it's just a sample size of one. Last offseason, we talked about it, and I said, well, the obvious move is you trade Moncada for Sale, and that's what happened. So when Matt talked about, what if they signed J.D. Martinez, and then as a result, that's when they went to trade JBJ, I'm going to say sign J.D. Martinez, trade JBJ for Belt. That's what I'm going to say.
That would be a very nice offseason. I'm going to go in a different direction here. I'm going
JBJ and other pieces. Okay, go for it.
I think the Red Sox actually do pull this thing off for Giancarlo Stanton, and I think that I think that they do it. I think my ultimate would be if they were to trade for Abreu instead, but I do think that Trader Dave gets this thing done and adds another head to his big game hunting wall. And I'm not sure if I like it. There might be a lot of pain involved in the price, but it would be pretty sweet to see Stanton in a Red Sox uniform. I think they'll do that and then sign one of these first base options or trade for a first baseman.
I gotta say, it's pretty convincing, and compelling. Here's a question I'll throw out. Let's just assume that the preconditions for a deal are that Devers or Benintendi is involved, and then let's go ahead and assume one more that means Devers is involved because Benintendi isn't going anywhere.
No.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Hold on. No, forget no. Forget no.
Okay.
Is there someone else on the Marlins that they could throw in that then further negotiations would be palatable?
Boer.
I don't think. I mean, I like Boer, but I would want like Yelich, and then that would be a whole another chain of events because outfielder. But
that's never going to happen.
I know, but I mean that's.
What about Bearclaw?
Bearclaw's awesome.
Yeah, he's great, but he's. I'm not giving up Devers for.
Stanton you would not. For Stanton and no, it's not a reliever. It's Bearclaw. He's good.
He is good, but he hasn't done it long enough. He's coming off an injury.
What do you know about? Hold on. I hear myself now.
Well, let's talk about those lefty relievers because you've been all over the lefty reliever thing. And when I diagnosed what the team needed, again on Twitter, after the Red Sox bowed out of the postseason this year, I was of the mind that they were going to go after either Mike Minor or Jake McGee. Why do you think Tony Watson out of that group? Because I've seen you on Jake McGee as well, so I know that you've been on these lefty relievers for a while. What's the separator here for you?
Watson's probably going to be a little cheaper. I don't know. I could see them getting McGee. They're around the same. Miner's probably a little bit more than they're going to want to spend, but Watson, McGee, I think they could go cheap and get like Brian Densing or Boone Logan or something. There's a lot of like just forgettable guys like that. I think Watson, he was like one of the most underrated relievers in baseball like a year and a half ago, so, and he was pretty good with the Dodgers after getting traded. I think he's interesting.
Do you guys still anticipate any trades before the Rule 5 draft?
Well, it's no.
No?
Well, not for that reason, at least.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure that there's anybody else who they're dying to protect that they need to get rid of anybody, but it's possible. We're going to see.
It's too late. The deadline was yesterday.
Right. But it's done. Yeah, I guess you're right. All right.
So does the Rule 5 have a 5-minute rule? Sorry.
I think it's probably like 1 minute.
Yeah, that's true.
I know it's done via conference call.
Is it?
I think so.
Wow, that's old school.
The Rule 5 is like one of the coolest download things in sports. Like anyone who becomes a regular major leaguer who's a Rule 5 player has every reason to just say fuck you to their former team. It's wonderful.
There aren't a lot of them.
No, there aren't, yeah.
I think Herrera and the Phillies. Was Batista one?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was a Rule 5 guy from, I think, Pittsburgh.
I feel like Brantley was one. Or Kluber. Somebody on Cleveland was. I don't know.
Occasionally, you know what? Wikipedia actually has a pretty good list of Rule 5 guys who...
Of course. What doesn't have Wikipedia have?
Yeah, they have like notable Rule 5 guys. It's pretty good. Oh, yeah.
Odubel Herrera is the recent one.
Jose Bautista, Bobby Bonilla, Everett Cabrera. That's a name from the past.
Everett Cabrera.
Jason Grilly was one. Josh Hamilton was one. Darren O'Day, Scott Ponsednik, Johan Santana is probably the most famous one.
Yeah, I would say that's probably
that's a good one.
Dan Uggla, Shane Victorino was one. Let me see if there's any more super attractive names on here.
Josh Rutledge.
Wei Chung Wang. Remember him?
No.
No.
The first All player right. making the major league team from a rookie league in the in MLB history, it says here.
Oh my God, I remember that now.
Fascinating stuff.
Willie Taveras. What about Ooh, Willie Taveras?
I remember him.
Yeah, big Willie style. All right, so let's get to the Red Sox farm system a little bit here. The Red Sox sent seven guys to the AFL. Is that right? This was seven?
Sure.
Yeah, I think it was seven. And then Brian Johnson ended up bowing out.
Yeah, he didn't go.
What was the deal with that, by the way?
I don't remember.
I don't either.
Injury, maybe? I don't know.
But the story is that the Red Sox AFL team this year, which is a combination of a bunch of other teams, it was the Peoria Javelinas, I believe it is. They had Michael Chavis starting for them at third and first this year. He played both positions for them, but he actually had a really good AFL. He batted .261, .327, .478. 805 OPS for him, and scouting reports were generally really good coming back on Chavis. So his team did win the championship, helped out by Ron Acuna, who was on that team, who's going to be just a ridiculous stud. But he was sort of an exit velocity stud throughout the AFL, and I thought that was kind of the most fascinating thing about it, because we all knew that Chavis made some strides and that Chavis has always been a little bit of a batting practice hero, but he's now doing this stuff in game with regularity, and he was able to do it against some really good players in the AFL. So I was wondering, I'll go with you first, Matt. What were your thoughts on his performance in the AFL?
I mean, I don't really put a ton of stock into AFL performance. I kind of feel like it was kind of a victory lap for him. He had such a good year. It was nice to see him end it on a high note. As far as the actual performance there, like I said, it's not, I don't think it's a huge deal, but, just in general, I'm super excited about him, and I'm getting kind of more excited as time goes on. He did a lot better in AA than I thought he was going to be after making that jump. And, I think he's just a reminder that you got to be patient with high school draft prospects. He was a first round pick. It kind of seemed like he was going to bust, and then he just broke out. I'm really excited to see what he's going to do next year.
Where do you think he's going to play?
Probably first and third.
So one of the interesting things about Chavis was that when he broke out last year, we were trying to find a spot for him. And I know I was one of the early suggesters of first base for him. And it seemed like people were pretty sour on that in general because of his height. But the team did play him there in the AFL, and it seemed like he did okay defensively. Do you think that that is ultimately going to be his home with the way that you know, some of the other Red Sox first base prospects, notably Sam Travis, has been performing?
No, I think he's probably going to get traded and stay at third or end up as a DH. I think the height is kind of a concern. You just don't really see first base when that short, but doesn't really matter. If he's hitting like this, he's going to find a spot on some team somewhere. So I'm not really worried about the defense right now.
Joyner, what do you think about Chavis?
David Cassidy died. That's what I feel. That's what I think. You know who that is? He died. He's dead. I don't have any thoughts on any of this. I'm terrible with prospects because I just don't care. And I leave it to you guys to tell me what to think. So continue to do that.
He's a really fun player on social media as well. I'll throw that out though.
I'm in.
He discovered Harry Potter like four or five months ago and was tweeting about it late into the night one night. He was like acting like he had just discovered it. Nobody had ever heard of it.
That's called Bill Simmonsing.
Let's give him a little more credit than that.
I mean, yes. The Bill Simmons thing focuses on the negative aspects of it. The positive aspects of it are, if you do it from time to time, it's interesting. If it's the only thing you do, gets a little exhausting. Speaking of which, Jake, next topic.
I just wanted to point out that Michael Chavis is 5'10", and that Carlos Santana is 5'11", and they're listed at the exact same weight. And Carlos Santana is a damn good first baseman.
He is.
So it can happen.
He's probably more of the exception than the rule, but that is a fair point.
Yes. All right. So examining the Red Sox prospects right now, I think before we look at the prospects, I think it is worth mentioning, and we haven't been on the podcast since a very unfortunate and tragic event happened, the passing of the Red Sox fifth-ranked prospect, according to SoxProspects.com, Daniel Flores. He was an international free agent out of Venezuela who the team signed this past July 2nd. He was only 17 years old, and he passed away extremely suddenly due to complications with testicular cancer. So I just wanted to take a second to sort of remember Daniel Flores, the player. He was regarded extremely highly defensively, one of the best players that really anybody had scouted defensively at that age. And by all accounts was just as good, if not better, as a person. So it is extremely, extremely sad and tragic that he passed away. And it seems like it was just sort of a freak event. The cancer metastasized really, really quickly and spread. So doesn't seem like there was a whole lot that anybody could have done to prevent this. But it is just really tragic, and I wanted to say that before we talked about the Red Sox system at all, because we do want to get into that, but we want to also give him some respect there. So the Red Sox system, though, wanted to look at that, has Jay Grom and Michael Chavis at the top of it right now. Brian Matta and Tanner Houck are the two guys right after that. And then we have a whole bunch of guys that were a little bit less sure about their roles going forward. So, you know, Sam Travis, Josh Ockamy, Cole Brennan, Michael Sharwin, Alex Scherff, Jalen Beeks. We've talked about some of these guys. Overall, I feel like the depth of the system is pretty good right now, but the Red Sox aren't particularly top-heavy, especially with position players the way that they have been. Matt, you're up in Maine, so you get to see the AA team quite a bit. What's your take on the current state of the system?
I think you kind of nailed it when you said they have a lot of depth, but nothing really at the top. I think it really comes down to this is a big year for Groom. He hasn't really – he's shown these flashes last year, his first full season. It would be nice to see him stay healthy for – most of this year and productive all year. And I think Brian Matta is the other really interesting one. He really exploded out of the gate when he first got called up to Greenville last year. He's only 18. If he can kind of stay on that trajectory, it gives them a really solid top three, plus Tanner Houck. Not sure if he ends up. I didn't get to see him in Lowell this year. Not sure if he's a starter or a reliever, but he's got that upside. So I think there's a chance that the system's a little better than people think, but there's a ton of variance, and it's a lot less sure than some of the systems in past years.
It is encouraging that Jay Groom is doing squats with Chris Sale, though.
Yeah, they're working out.
Yeah, I agree with you. It is certainly not as top heavy as it used to be, but it'll be exciting to see some of these guys develop. Brian Matta is a really interesting guy because I think that what he did last year really surpassed every expectation. The guy who I think I'm most excited about following next year, though, is Alex Scherff, who is their fifth rounder this year. Really, really good talent for the fifth round, and somebody who I think could dominate and move pretty quickly, and someone who I could actually see staying as a starter. Do you have any thoughts about Scherff, Matt?
Not really. I don't know a ton about him.
Hey, Jake.
Yeah.
How does Brian Mata spell Brian?
With a Y.
Yes, what's up?
The right way. That was
they're all about themselves. They're Brian with an I. I ask questions. Why?
All right. So with that, I feel like the steam has been let out of this podcast.
I wanted to do that into this because to give it good, faithful impression of what's going on at this house.
I really wish you would have muted that, but
not gonna happen. It's in. We're an hour. We're an hour in. Anyone who's still listening to this, they bought in.
There is. We are fully showing our off-season rust right now in this podcast, but you know that's okay. This is a rendition one for what is going to be many, many, many tries for us this upcoming year. Again, before we close out tonight, I just want to reiterate to everybody that the Red Seat is sticking around. We are just switching homes. Again, we are moving to Over the Monster from BP Boston. I will be with you on this podcast as the host. Matt Collins will be with us. Brian Joyner will be with us. And we will continue to bring in very high quality guests as well. Hopefully we will stay in the exact same place. So please follow me on Twitter at @devjake for any future updates with the Red Seat. You can also follow Matt on Twitter at @MattRYCollins. And you can also follow Brian Joyner on Twitter at @BrianJoyner, Brian with a Y, because that's the right way to spell it, according to him. We will be with you periodically throughout the offseason. I don't think we've decided, guys, how often we're going to be doing this. And it might be a little bit till we get our next one out as we sort through the transition. But we will certainly be with you as news breaks and continue to stay with us there. And for all of our listeners out there, we really do appreciate all of you guys subscribing to us and tuning in and helping this podcast continue to grow. We were able to grow significantly from our first season to our second season, and hopefully moving the podcast can help our growth even more in the future. So guys, I'm really excited for the future of the Red Seat.
Absolutely.
I prefer the Reds Eat podcast, but until you want to talk about Joey Votto's lunches, this will work.
I was just picturing Pete Rose stuffing his face with those peppers that have prosciutto inside of them.
Jesus. No.
Yeah. Wow, that got raw. All right.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Yes.
All right. Take care, guys.